And welcome to another episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. I am Triforce Todd, and joining me today is Wario Will.
I really got nothing funny to say. It's just the fact that, one, Sonic is just booming, literally, it's our title, and Animal Crossing back here is just like, wow, my mind is blown.
And, freshly off of a viewing of Sonic the Hedgehog movie, Talia's Tyler.
I had to go out and see it before we did the podcast, and I apologize for being obnoxious in advance because I am on cloud nine right now. I cannot believe how great this movie was. It's just like it's everything that you wanted as a Sonic fan. It's so good. I can't believe it was actually good. Like, I know the reviews said it was good. I know last week I said I believe it was actually good. After watching it, it's better than I thought it was going to be when I thought it was going to be good. It's an unbelievable take on Sonic. They nailed it. Sonic is back. Like, is in again. I cannot tell you the last time I was this excited about the future of Sonic the Hedgehog.
Which we will get to, obviously, in all of our various segments, including one about the future of video game movies. But we're going to start off with what have you been playing? I'm going to start because I've honestly had kind of a light week of gaming because of work. I'm slowly getting ready for a C2E2, the Chicago Comic Con, where I will be taking, of course, plenty of pictures of Nintendo cosplayers, I am sure. So come and see me if you're going to be around there. But I have been playing Pokemon, and I am at the point where you just fought Olena in the Rose Tower, and we're getting ready for the final battles against the gym leaders. And I didn't really think about it the first time because I was still comprehending it, but man, the story in the game is, you know, because it's like, you know, what Rose is trying to do and then Olena trying to protect him and everything. And then it just happens. And it's like, it's not exactly the deepest of Pokemon stories, which I know isn't always the point, but you'd think for the first console game, they'd go all out. And yet what Rose does literally doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah, the story was disappointing. You know, Pokemon games don't need to have a great story. They can be very straightforward. I thought what they did in Sun and Moon was great when they... And actually, you know what? I'm going to tie it back into the Sonic movie. The plot doesn't have to be amazing. The plot doesn't have to be like this groundbreaking story. When you focus on the characters, you really take away a lot of the damage that can be done by a bad plot.
And I felt that way about Birds of Prey.
Yeah, like, and that's how I felt about the Sonic movie, although the plot's whatever, it's fine. But I feel the same way about Pokemon Sword and Shield. The characters just, outside of the gym leaders, aren't interesting enough to make up for the just milquetoast, straightforward, you know what's going to happen before the game even begins plot.
Yeah, so, still enjoying it. I mean, I still got a really balanced team, and like when I fought Olena, I felt like, okay, she's gonna do a Zarini next. Oh, I need a fire type. Bring out Arcanine, and you know, it was like I like having that balance because I honestly didn't have that in the first one because I was focusing more on evolution and trying to fill out my Pokedex. So it was nice to go back to that. And then also I've been playing Fire Emblem Heroes. Obviously, been enjoying the continued adventures of the third anniversary gifts and rollouts and everything. I've been getting a lot of 5-star characters recently. However, I do want to re-note something I said, I think, 3 or 4 episodes ago. They really need to change the game to Fire Emblem Harem. One of the recent banners was the Special Heroes 2 banner. Came out, like, yesterday, I believe it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And it had, like, the swimsuit versions of various characters. On a whim, I decided to play. I had, like, over 400, like, 50 orbs at that point. You could blame the 3rd anniversary for that. And I just said, you know what, let's just see who I get. So I do like, the Rolodex and all that. And I get the, Burning Sun Lejarne, who I swear, one of the most skimpy outfits. Kamiya would be proud of this outfit.
Yeah, Lejarne's looking good.
That's one way of putting it.
I don't know. I mean, not seeing her. She is fire. She's little fire. I'm not talking because she comes from Musefell.
And that's
fire.
Fine, but that's again, one of my problems with this game is that, you know, when you meet Lejarne and her sister...
Levitine.
Levitine, thank you. They have very interesting names. I do appreciate that. But, you know, when you meet Lejarne and Levitine, they're, you know, they're in very powerful-looking armor. You know, they're war generals, and I really like that. And then you see him in the beach banner, and, you know, Lejarne's looking like that. And it's just like, and then like her pose and like the way she's looking at you through the art. It's just like, really, guys? Really?
Hey, at least you guys got something. I mean, one of you guys got the freaking Summer Gunther, did you not?
I got Summer Gunther, yeah.
Yeah, he got Summer. I think I've already had Summer Gunther, but don't hold me to it.
I mean, normal Gunther, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I've been stocking up on that, and then I've been just, you know, keep collecting my orbs and, you know, doing forging bonds and holoform. Oh yeah, and I did the new heroes banner. That one had a weird thing. That one had a weird thing going on because I've gotten two of the characters, two of the four. So that's where I stopped. But one of them came to me as a 4-star, even though I vaguely remember them saying that was going to happen. That they're going to do like, you know, can you get them as 4-stars and 5-stars now? But it was just weird. It was Wrath.
Okay.
And then I got 5-star Nils. So.
Oh, nice.
I forgot that was Ninian's brother.
Did you really? Yeah.
It's been a while. Everybody remembers Ninian because of Roy. You know, because they were a couple.
Well, Ellenwood, but yeah.
Right.
No, sorry, Ellenwood. Who did I say?
You said Roy, but that's okay. I shouldn't have even corrected you. We knew what you were saying.
Did you? No. okay, which one was Wrath, though?
Wrath was
from Sakai,
the guy who Lynn saves him in the first part of the game. He's serving the Marquess, who like turns her down because she's a native person.
Gotcha.
And then he leaves him. Yeah.
Okay, that's right. I was like, well, you say it was from Sakai, and then there was like, you know, and when I think of Sakai, I of course think of Lynn. I'm like, he's got the same hair as her. Is he her son from the other game? Because technically, Lynn isn't in Binding Blade.
Right.
Which is weird when you think about it, but whatever.
He is a marriage option for Lynn, and he has what's, I think, it's not Sue. Maybe it is Sue, which is a weird name for somebody from Sakai, but he has a daughter who's in Heroes, as well as a green archer on horseback.
I also want to note that Lynn still has, in my opinion, one of the funniest, like, ending scripts of, like, you know, what happens to them after. One of them is, I don't remember who she's with, but it literally says she returns to the forest with her lover, and I'm like, well, that's very adult to say to be okay.
It probably is Wrath, then, because he's...
Might have been, I don't know.
He is a marriage option for Lynn, so...
True. Anyway, so yeah, but my gaming has been like... However, in a very random bit of joy, we got a DLC code for the Fire Emblem Three Houses DLC, and Will already had his, Tyler already had his, I hadn't gotten mine yet, but I was going to because of Cindered Shadows. And so now I don't have to pay for it. I've got the DLC for free.
I just kind of find it like now of all times Nintendo would send us randomly out of nowhere this DLC for Cindered Shadows.
Nintendo, we didn't ask really? For it, just to be clear. We didn't ask for it.
It was really strange because I had reviewed it for the site already when
so
you
proud.
Got the code.
So proud of you.
I know, thanks. I was proud of me too.
Actually, with that, I will end it. So, Tyler, you can tell me about your Cindered Shadows adventures.
Yes. So, I played Cindered Shadows and naturally had lots of thoughts on it, and that's why I had to review it. It was really, really fun. The plot it's not very good. I will just say that the story, right away, you know exactly where things are going. Like, there's, like, stuff that happens that's supposed to be plot twists, and you're like, we all knew this was going to happen. We might as well have just gotten to the point. But the actual gameplay is fantastic. I am disappointed they recycled 3 maps from the main story, and they kind of just like gave them a fresh coat of paint and a different starting position. So they do play very differently, but I wish they had all brand new maps. But one level in the middle of the DLC is, I think, the best chapter in the entire game. It is an escape mission where you have to get your entire army, you're running away from these golems that are chasing you, and you have to get the whole army to like this set space, and everybody has to be able to pack in like sardines into the spot at the end. And it is an extreme challenge, definitely one of the hardest missions in the game, and it really puts your skills to the test. And I guess in Three Houses you can kind of avoid a lot of the difficulty by just building your units in overpowered ways. There are plenty of combinations that you could look up online to make sure every one of your units is just a force that can't be defeated. But with Cinder Shadows, they've really cut back on player choice, which I think is a negative for some people, but I kind of enjoyed it. You are given the same set of characters. So you have the four new characters, the Ashen Wolves. You have the three house leaders, Edelgard, Dimitri, and Claude. And then you have Linhart, Ash, and Hilda as your team. So you can't really mix and match there. And then those characters do know multiple classes, but you can't teach them new ones. So, for example, Edelgard starts out as a fortress knight, and you can reclass her into a warrior. And Dimitri starts out as a cavalier, and you can reclass him into a hero. So you can maneuver a little bit depending on your playstyle, but you couldn't make Linhart a swordmaster if you wanted to. He is there to be your dedicated healer, and Ash is there to be your archer, your ship damage guy, although you can reclass him into hero. So you have some flexibility, but not a ton, and it kind of makes every battle feel more like a puzzle than kind of like a sandbox. Here's the tool. You create your own toolkit sort of deal. In this one, you have the tools and you have to figure out how to use them. It feels more like a traditional Fire Emblem game. I love both styles of play, and this was really refreshing to me. But if you really love Three Houses exclusively for being able to teach your students, there's no teaching here at all. There is exploring, though. You do get to explore Abyss, which is fairly small, but it's expansive enough. I would say it's like, I don't know, a fifth of the size of the first floor of Garrick Mach. It's not very big, but there's stuff there to do. There's some cool stuff to discover. But where it really thrives is expanding the lore of the universe. There is a lot of mysteries that you'll find and that will be answered, mainly focusing on Byleth's mom. You'll learn a lot about her throughout the campaign, which is very cool. But you'll see so many other little details that people like make passing allusions to that you're like, man, I wonder why that's there, that are never truly answered, which could irritate some folks. But for me, I find it exciting. You know, there's more to discover in the world of Foland, and I just hope that we can go back to it. So overall, I gave it a 4 out of 5. Very good. If you enjoyed Three Houses, you'll enjoy this. It's more of a good thing. And you can recruit all the Ashen Wolves into your main campaign. So I am doing my Black Eagles run now, and I've recruited all of the Ashen Wolves into the house. They appear in the monastery. You can still visit Abyss in the main game to talk to them. It's a really, really good update overall, and one that I think that if you haven't played the game for a while, is worth going back and diving into. Definitely worth the price of admission.
Very nice. Yeah, I don't know when I'm going to be able to play it, because again, I've got to get ready for a con next week. But when I play it, I'm sure I will enjoy it, and then I will use that as my catapult into the Silver Snow storyline.
Yeah.
So I look forward to that. All right, Will, what you got?
Well, unfortunately, sadly for me, it has been kind of light as well. I have dabbled into a little bit of Fire Emblem Heroes, just trying my luck. And you pretty much predicted this, Tyler, but yes, I have, for the time being, joined the dark side. I have tried the subscription pass, and I'll let you guys know right now. Yes, like, the subscription pass itself features, it is very irky that they have to go paywall such convenient feature. But the convenient feature is, yes, you can pretty much like go like really rapid back-to-back auto battles. For example, like in the building your bond events, like you could easily set up like repeat battles very fast. And so instead of like the usual manual grinding, you could actually just leave it auto battles, which is really quickly. So naturally, it does save you a lot of time. And of course, like the Resplendent Heroes, for example, the Resplendent Lin, which the new convos from Lin, yeah, basically she talks a lot more with Fjorm, Guntra, a lot more in respect to what was the Ice Kingdom? I forgot the
name
for him.
Niffle.
Yeah.
Niffle.
So yeah, she a nice little combos with that, and of course like the three extras, two more extra supports to your summoner, so you could put much more +2 stats on there. So it's not bad to say the least. It does help out. It's much more very convenient than anything else. Plus, and also you get the extra orbs from the Fae Pass missions, which it's kind of it's nice, but also I'll let you guys know right now, like, the entire price of admission for this 1 month pass for the time being now, including tax, is $10.33. So yeah, take that with a grain of salt if you want to, like, if you want to just invest in 1 month. And so obviously you don't want to invest for the entire year because that's $120 easily. So like, if you want to, like, cancel your subscription, make sure you, like, do so. So definitely be responsible on subscription services. And aside from that, it's just kind of quiet. I wanted to go and play video games, but unfortunately, one, my brother's been hogging up on main TV on my PS4, and I mean, I tried to go and get myself into it, but I'm not sure you guys have seen ever saw this comic from Adam Ellis. Like, during the entire day, like, I'm so tired, I just want to go home and play video games this entire day, like. That's the mentality you have in your head. But then once you finally reach back home at 7 o'clock, you look at your game right in front of you, like, and then suddenly too tired to play video games.
We've all been there, Will. We've all been there.
Yeah, it was just like, and of course, like, actually during this past week, I actually was celebrating my mom's birthday as well, so it was just kind of a bit of family affairs that I was attending to as well. So, but overall, it's just kind of been a light week of gaming otherwise. And ever since I came back from Malaysia, I kind of feel like I really am contemplating to get Ring Fit Adventure, because I just unfortunately gained pounds during my vacation, so I'm actually legitimately considering getting a Ring Fit Adventure.
I was thinking about it too, but because of how I play the Switch, I don't have my port set up to my TV, and my TV's in a spot because of certain things. It would be actually really hard for me to set it up correctly, so yeah, there goes my chance of doing Ring Fit Adventure.
I mean, by itself, you can do it in handheld mode, but of course, naturally, you'll have the small screen to do it. So, yeah. I mean, it's possible, but of course, you need
not
to
recommend.
Have a little bit of room space. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, we have a light but impactful week of news to talk about. So, it's time to go down the warp pipe. And to start off, it's judgment time. Judgment for Tyler. Because last week he promised us a Nintendo Direct.
That's right.
And he was wrong.
No,
however,
no, no.
However, we did get a game-specific Direct. And so I leave it to you, NEP faithful. Was Tyler right or was Tyler wrong? Because if you go back to the last episode, he specifically said there will be a Nintendo Direct next week. Not an Animal Crossing Direct, a Nintendo Direct. A Nintendo Direct is an all-encompassing Direct about Nintendo, not a game-specific one, which is why the Smash Bros. Direct didn't count, which is why the Pokemon Direct didn't count. We are waiting for a full Nintendo Direct. So I will leave it to you, and it will be one of our poll questions today. Did Tyler correctly call this with the Animal Crossing Direct?
So let me lay out, like, my case, just, you know.
Very
so, when I say Nintendo Direct, you know, that's shorthand. You know, this is a Triforce Todd classic trick. It's a classic trick that he's trying to pull to manipulate the audience to believe that I steered them wrong. Listen, I delivered. I told you we were going to get a Direct. We got a Direct.
No, you said we got a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, but I am sure I also said just Direct, you know, the general Direct. And what is an Animal Crossing Direct if not a Nintendo Direct? It is in the spirit of what I was saying, we were going, this, it happened, you know?
Oh, really, Tyler? Would you like to tell the audience how much of that spirited Direct you watched today?
I have to tell you, I do not like Animal Crossing very much.
There you go.
I watched like 90 or 25 minutes of the 27, and I got bored and I stopped watching. I did not watch the last two. But listen, people, I have great news. I'm going to make it two in a row, because we're going to have a Nintendo Direct next week that's a traditional Nintendo Direct.
Okay, so I want you to say that one more time.
Next week. Next week, the week of
Sunday. The other part.
We will have a Nintendo Direct.
No. What was the other word you used?
A traditional Nintendo Direct.
There you go. It is sealed in stone.
We will have a traditional, yes. Yes, and listen, it's going to be like 35 minutes long. Featuring games like Breath of the Wild 2. Okay, I'm not guaranteeing that. That's
yeah, don't push your luck, kid.
Will have a Nintendo Direct next week.
Traditional
Nintendo Direct next week.
All right, you are my witness, Will. If it does not come to pass, you know exactly what sound clip to get.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. So anyway, so getting to the direct that Tyler did not call right, we did indeed have a 27-minute Animal Crossing Direct showcasing all the stuff that you can do in Animal Crossing New Horizons and more. And I, as a good host of the NEP show, I watched it all. And although I am not a, you know, Animal Crossing fan either, I've never played the game, I do admit that there is a lot of things that a person who does like this franchise is going to like. I liked the sculpting aspect. I liked how you can actually do co-op with friends. I liked how, you know, you could slowly but surely upgrade, you know, your house, the island. You could actually go on, like, mystery island tours to get more resources. You can bring in classic Animal Crossing characters into the game, including the one and only Isabelle is going to be there. Tyler's favorite Smash Brothers character,
Isabelle,
of course.
The dog.
Yep. What did I say?
I was just clarifying that Isabelle is a dog.
Yes. Isabelle the dog. Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah.
A female dog, to be precise. A female, not just any dog, a female dog.
That's true. That's very true.
I was going to make a joke here, but we're a PG program. Anyway, so I liked all of that and the way they're expanding. There will be free updates throughout the game's life, that they insinuated anyway. They are going to have a save data recovery option. It will be coming soon after the game launches, so for you people worried about your losing your save game data, you won't have to worry as much.
I just want to go and point out, because like I'm sorry to interrupt you, but like during that part of the presentation regarding the save data recovery, like have you ever managed to read the fine print, Todd?
It says you can do it once.
Yeah, that is like the little caveat.
Yeah, and if you'll let me finish, I would have told you that. Never interrupt the host, ever. Anyway, but yes, there will still not be cloud saves. We got to make that very clear. But there are going, if you have like a console failure, a game failure, or certain other things that are entirely not your fault, and obviously deleting save data on a Switch is kind of difficult, you are going to be allowed to reboot it once. So I know that's not exactly the answer a lot of people have been hoping for, but better than what you were at 2 weeks ago. Kind of, I see this very much as a Mario Maker 2 situation. You know? It's like, oh, we can't play friends with friends online? Okay, now you can play with friends online. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Nintendo.
I can't help but wonder, like, because they have all these, like, great features, like, already built in base game already as it is. And like with like recent products, I just feel like they're just later adding on this thing, like after the whole fan feedback. Like, yeah, we're gonna have it later. After it's like, geez, Nintendo, really? You're gonna do this after the feedback? Yeah.
Oh, I think they're just taking it as because they're not doing cloud saves, which I'm sure is just a product of the game itself, because of, you know, the eight players, you know, having the same island and all that. You know, they don't expect it to fail in regards to the save data. They're not expecting you to play the game and then all of a sudden your console breaks in such a way that you lose all your save data. You know, they don't build this game to expect it to fail in that capacity. Now, yes, in the modern gaming age that we're in, they should, you know, have these kind of redundancies, but I'm not going to fault them for not doing it, because again, with how the Switch works, all you have to do is just log into your new profile and your games are saved. So it's a complicated thing, but they are trying to fix it. And if for whatever reason this version of the save fix doesn't work, I would expect Nintendo to add a different kind of fix. Unlike certain other companies, they do like to take care of their fans.
Generally. And also, yeah, that's what I like on briefly topics, like, of course, like, during this entire direct, I just can't help but, I'm just getting that whole, back in my day, because I played the original Animal Crossing, and like, back in my day, we had to go and accept the basic map with the preset ramps and ladders and waterfalls. Now you got to have you can actually allow terraforming on this thing, actually build your Atlans, built rivers, built waterfalls, break mountains. Like, jeez Louise, I kind of feel like the future generations got so much more easier these days.
I just feel like that should have always been an Animal Crossing, right? Like, when I saw that and I saw people were freaking out about it, it made me realize, oh my gosh, you've had to live in, like, a preset space for so long. And I think, how did they do it in New Leaf? Like, it was depending on the questions you answered when you were on the train in the beginning of the game, that determined, like, the layout of your place.
Yeah. Generally, it's just, like, first time showing terraforming in Animal Crossing, like, I could have done this 15 years ago, and now you haven't. It's just like, wow, not, and that's the most exciting thing I feel from this presentation, like the fact that you can finally like really customize your island from its geography is like, that's amazing for longtime fans. So for me, like that's definitely one of the main aspects why people want to get this game. It's just now that little customization from like building that perfect island, it's now doable. It's much more doable.
The reception for it was so positive too. This direct, I think when I checked the ratio on YouTube, had like 400 dislikes and 27,000 likes. Like, people were really excited about that terraforming feature, which is great. I think that having that in the game is obviously fantastic. I'm surprised it wasn't there earlier.
Yeah, technology, right, and of course, preferences, everything, you know.
Right. And of course, like, also, like, showing off, like, many fan return characters like Click, and of course, allegedly Mr. Rossetti, who thought was, like, lost the job because now there's autosave feature. You can't actually call him Mr. Rossetti because, you know, Reset. But now he's actually using part of the Rangers, which supposedly just, like, quick travels you to a certain spot, which, finally, Mr. Rossetti has a job now. So that's kind of nice. But, yeah, just, like, and of course, like, the features I'll bring, QR codes of your designs from prior games like City Folk and Happy Home Designer is like very nice. So all that time making that perfect design won't go to waste. And of course, with Animal of Amiibo support coming back again. So if you did that long time investment in the beginning, now it's finally paying off now. So yeah, anybody who has Amiibo cards, yeah, now it's paying off. So overall, the direct itself is just, it's really a very solid direct. Great OST soundtrack. It's just so chill.
Soundtrack is nice.
It's just like so much customization. I can really see like why people would be excited. Just like it's so casual. It's just like it's hard not to be angry at this game.
Yeah, and like we said, this is going to be a key part of Nintendo 2020, especially since we don't know much about it. And this game will easily sell 5 million, I would bet on that.
Oh, yeah. Because I forget, I think New Leaf sold like 13 million on 3DS. So I'm expecting even more than that at the end of the day. And Animal Crossing is like, what's it called? An evergreen game that has really good
lists. Very much so. Yes.
That'll sell for a long time.
That was one of the reasons why New Leaf sold so well, because it was very much an evergreen.
Yeah. One of the things I really wanted to point out was how beautiful the game looks, too. That's the one thing I really was impressed with. The visuals are phenomenal, and as Will said about the music being serene, I think that the visual presentation goes such a long way to furthering that kind of immersion, that relaxation. Just the color palette is so nice. I'm not an artist, so I can't describe it. It's very soothing to look at.
Yes. And like, of course, like how they added like much more to like the basic functions, like the with the like the Times Square, like Nook's headquarters, of course the museum, which it's so much more bigger, a full-fledged aquarium, the whole planetarium, and of course is just like that's the main appeal about Animal Crossing, is that it's heavily a casual game, but it's like just the fact like you could really just do whatever you want with this thing is like that's the reason why it has been. It still remains so ever-present all these years.
All right, moving on to Tyler's topic.
Yeah.
Sonic the Hedgehog. So if you somehow did not know, Sonic the Hedgehog raced to the top slot on the box office charts. It is the number one movie in the world. And it did indeed defeat Detective Pikachu to become the best video game opening... Sorry, best video game movie opening in history.
Mm-hmm.
So... Now, as we were joking about earlier, the critics didn't like it as much as Tyler thinks they did. He was sitting at 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, but the audience score and the cinema score, which is how people think about it right after the movie, was near perfect. Like, and that doesn't just happen, all right? That's never happened for a video. Not even, like, Avengers Endgame, I believe, had that high of a audience score. So, like, that's saying something that Sonic connected with people that much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it goes so much towards, I guess, the discussion of critics versus audiences. Like, if I was a movie critic, if I was Roger Ebert, you know, I'm not giving this movie a 4.5 out of 5. You know, the plot is not great, and it's not like it's in reinventing the wheel. But as a fan of Sonic, and as a kid, because I think this movie goes beyond, like, people like me. I mean, I'm 26 years old, and I went to go see the Sonic movie, and there were the people in the theater. I thought I'd be the only person. I'd be surrounded by little kids, but there was a really good mix of people. There were some adults, there were people my age, and there were little kids who really haven't grown up on Sonic because they looked to be, you know, 7 or 8, and they were cracking up, loving all this, the entire movie. It's an unbelievable kids movie, in addition to being an unbelievable homage to Sonic fans. And that, I think that is where you get that 95, 94 audience score. Because if it was a movie that was just for Sonic fans, I think that today's kids may not have resonated with it as much, and you would have seen a drop there. And if it wasn't such a great homage to Sonic fans, people like me who went to see it wouldn't have liked it very much. So it really, it hit its audience perfectly. And its audience just isn't, you know, Roger Ebert. It's not great. It's not a critical... it's not going for that. It's not Parasite, you know. It's a Sonic Hedgehog movie, and it's just what you want from it.
And, funny story enough, because, like, you said you didn't have any kids around during your showtime. I had a lot of kids appearing for my screening. And, yeah, like, a lot of people, like, I even see, like, one kid actually bring a Sonic and Tails doll to the theater, which is actually pretty nice that the younger generation is actually appreciating Sonic. So, yeah, that's all for you, Tyler.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Like, it's just so amazing to, like, see, like, even for, like, adults, even also getting the Sonic references, because I was just, like, trying to look for all the Sonic Easter eggs, listening to the details. And also, might I just want to point out the beginning logo, when he showed up the Sega logo? They shut off the entire Sega library, including Valkyria Chronicles, Yakuza, and my old personal favorite, Skies of Arcadia.
Yes. Wait, your favorite trailer. Skies of Arcadia? Oh my god!
They put in Golden Axe. That was, like, that's how you knew. I knew I was going to be in for a treat when they had the Paramount stars come in, but they were rings. And then they did the sound effect of Sonic collecting a bunch of rings, and it was great. Then they had, like, the Marvel does their thing where they show all the heroes. they start, like, zoomed in on Green Hill from Sonic 1, and then, like, pulled back and showed all the classics and kind of Sonic passing through time. That was very exciting.
Yeah, and I'm going to take it as a victory. They shut off Yakuza, Skies of Arcadia in the big screen. I'll take that as a win. I don't care.
There was a few other things that were in there that, like, that were gaming references that were so just awesome and dead on. I like that, yeah, the Mushroom Planet that Sonic might have to retreat to. I don't know if that was a subtle jab at Mario from the olden days. I just kind of felt like it was.
Well, the fact that Eggman is a red guy in Mushroom Land, perhaps, and yeah, just, like, so much references from the details and the 90s references of, like, 90s pop culture with, like, Bill and Ted that showed up at the telephone booth, which are, like, thank you for Bill and Ted references there. But I do gotta admit, the product placement was a little bit much. I mean, it did attract me from the movie, but the product placement was there, especially with the whole Zillow and, of course, the Olive Garden thing, which...
Olive Garden was funny to me.
Olive Garden's, like, still around. What's your problem?
Well, no, so, like, you know how people do sponsored content all the time, and yeah, like, it's a thing in movies now. The Sonic movie has two products that are really, really pushed, and that's Olive Garden, which I felt they did a nice job with, but the Zillow one, that one I didn't know about going in, and as soon as I saw, like, she felt like she was in an advertisement. Until, oh, I found these apartments on Zillow. It was like, I don't know, that one felt forced. The Olive Garden one was funny, but that one felt forced.
Right, and then, of course, like, there's the basic ones like fart jokes, and of course the whole flossing Fortnite dances, which thankfully only twice, so I can bear with that one. But yeah,
like, so we're not breaking overall down every scene,
please don't.
But
don't,
I must
time
say, I must
okay, okay,
say,
okay, 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 okay,
the
okay
flossing scene was fine. that just felt like kid energy. You know, that felt like, I don't know, that felt natural to me. I didn't mind that at all. I thought that was good. And the farting thing was like way overblown on Twitter. That was funny too. Yeah, I don't know. I can't believe how good the movie was.
All right, Tyler.
That overall thought was pretty good, yeah.
Tyler, what's your thoughts on Jim Carrey as Dr. Ivo Robotnik?
So you look at Jim Carrey and you're like, I know what he's done. He has the personality for it. But it's incredible that such a skinny man could embody Dr. Robotnik so well. When you're first introduced to him, I'm like, this is all right. But as the movie goes on and he becomes progressively more and more deranged, he starts to really nail the Dr. Robotnik Eggman energy. He nailed it. He was great. I do think that Ben Schwartz as Sonic is the highlight of the movie, but Jim Carrey is right behind him.
All right, Tyler, so the big question that everybody wants to know, will you be writing a Sonic review?
I was going to see. We don't have one, right?
No, we do not.
Then I will. But should I do it? I mean, I am so biased. I am so biased. And
Tyler,
you know, like...
Stop. This is the kind of movie that is built for people like you. All right? True. Like, I have a friend. Her name's Chelsea, and she's... Birds of Prey a whole bunch of times, and she's like, but I'm biased because I like Harley. I'm like, no, you're seeing it wrong. You're the person they're appealing to because you like Harley. If you don't like the movie, how are we supposed to?
That's
and it's
true.
The exact same here. You love Sonic, or so I'm told. And you know, and so if you didn't like this movie, if you a diehard Sonic fan, has played so many of the games, good, bad, or indifferent, if you don't like this movie, how are we supposed to?
Right.
So write the date. Just go
okay,
talk
I will.
To Sarah.
I will do it. No, I will do it. I was thinking about it. I wasn't sure if we had one already or not. But
to
since
my knowledge,
we
do not.
I will write the Sonic movie.
Okay, but
review.
Just tag Sarah in the appropriate Discord chat. Make sure she has a sheet you need to fill out first. But tag her in it. Go and do it. Be happy.
Okay. You got it.
All right. Okay, moving on. I know it's going to be hard. I know. Moving on, we got to talk about Pokemon now. Because Pokemon had two big pieces of news. Week one of them involves Pokemon Home, which was last week. If you recall, there were two versions of the app, if you will. One was on the Switch proper, and one was on mobile devices. Well, the mobile devices have apparently gotten over 1.3 million downloads. Now, I don't know if that's within the first few days or the first week, but it was via an article posted today. So at least within the first week, it's gotten over 1.3 million views. It's already made $1.8 million via the subscription services you use for Home. And that's just the phone app, not the Switch app. We have no idea how many people have downloaded on Switch yet. But I would be shocked if it wasn't like at least double, maybe even triple. But even then, the fact that a million people have already downloaded this app on the phone at least, that's 1/16 of what of the people playing Pokemon Sword and Shield. So I would call that a success.
I think it's also in regards to can you bring Pokemon from Pokemon Go into Pokemon Home?
It's just really hard. It's like an overly complicated process because of the fact that it's on a phone and not a console or whatever, so it's not like a direct connect kind of thing. So, yeah, but yes, you can do it. But I'm looking forward to when the Switch numbers come out. I'm interested in seeing what that's gonna be. So, yeah, it's cool, because you know we were all wondering whether this was gonna be a real thing, and or like this was gonna be a good thing, and it apparently is. So, yeah. Now, the other piece of news is something that we should have accepted as a good thing, but we just can't have anything nice now, can we? All right. Pokemon Twilight Wings, if you recall, is a mini-series set in the Galar region, or however the heck you say it. If Mr. Telly's Tyler over there could say Mario and Mario,
yeah,
I can
you know
say,
what? Nobody's going to correct you for Galar or Galar.
I'm going to say Galar region.
I say
like Galar,
you say
I think
Galar.
It sounds better. Galar region. It sounds like a battle car, like not Galar. That sounds like Valor, which I guess would work with Sword and Shield. Never mind. So... Twilight Wings was a miniseries that was released to kind of give like side stories of the Galar region set from different viewpoints that won't be shown in something like with the Ash cartoon. All right, and the second one is focused on the gym leader B, who you see in Pokemon Sword. And if you recall from the first episode, they show a fight between her and champion Leon, and she loses. Second episode is about her recovering from that loss by going to the wild area with her fighting type Pokemon and trying to train to get better and pushing her body to the limit. And I feel it was a beautiful episode. The animation was spot on. The way they showed off the wild area was cool. The kind of frenetic pace and the randomness of what Pokemon they're going to see. And then the showing the connection between B and her Pokemon, especially like given her toughness with the Pokemon. She was sparring with Machamp. That's how yeah, tough like, she is.
Yeah, just taking a punch and just like only having a bruise on her wrist, like you, and just even outperforming Machamp on the rock push-ups on her backs. Like, wow, you know she's hardcore.
Yep. Yeah. So, and then like it was her Pokemon that helped her out in the episode and everything, and it was honestly a really beautiful episode. And yet, not hours later. Okay, there is a controversy surrounding this episode. Was it that B was fighting with Machamp to train herself? Oh no, that wasn't it. Was it the use of the wild area? No, it was that the people who animated this thing were accused of whitewashing. I know.
All
right, now.
Like, it's the whole Nessa situation all over again. Like, seriously, people, come on. Like, even on the whole shades, like, it's pretty much it's the same thing. Like, are you really that buggered of details? Like, I know that was in the details and all that, but are you really so hung up on that slight detail that like, you're gonna accuse on that statement? Is like, geez Louise, come on. I know 2020 is off to a rough start, but we don't need any more fire added to it.
Yeah, now I know what you're thinking. Like, well, wait a minute, Todd. There are some legit cases of whitewashing that goes on in the movies nowadays. Doctor Strange! For the record, that's for reference to the Ancient One, not actually Doctor Strange. Benedict Cumberbatch is awesome. Anyway, are they legitimate? 25%. Okay, I am looking at an article that's talking about the whitewashing incident, and if you look at screenshots of B from Pokemon Sword, she does have a slightly darker skin tone, but she's not brown, she's not black, she's tan, for lack of a better term. In the Twilight Wings, she is very much light skinned, and so what does that say? It says that she gets tanned in the game. Okay.
Right. Again, have you not know how people tan functions? You know, even if we're dark skinned people, like it does line up on different shades. There are shades, you know.
Yeah. And not to mention,
I'm playing devil's advocate here. I think that they went too far here. I do. I mean, when I play Pokemon Sword, I fought B, and she was clearly what's it called? Just dark complexion. And she is really white here. I don't know. Listen, I'm not the arbiter of social, what's acceptable and what's not. But if the question is, did they make her white? Yes, they made her white.
Not a whole lot, if you ask me.
Look at the pictures. It's very clear.
I did, and it is clear. It is clear that there was some color alterations. I will not deny that. But was this a case of whitewashing or just different color palette? I feel it was the latter. A great example is Ash Ketchum, because they've changed how he looks, including technically his skin color from series to series based on the color palette that they've been using. It's not a lot, but it's enough to notice.
Yeah.
So
I mean, and I don't think it's a very big deal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I see why people would. I could see why people would be upset about it. You know, if that character meant something to them, if B being an African American meant something to the African American community, I could see how they'd be like, "Oh, you're taking this character away from us." I see that.
But I don't think that's what's happening. And again, they're focusing on this instead of the very beautiful episode of Twilight Wings that was shown. I mean, this was like a triumph of, in my opinion, of like 6-minute animation. It told a very good story. It had so much beauty in it and everything, and that they're focusing on skin color.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and again, setting and context, yes, this is a big issue. Again, I refer again to Doctor Strange, where they had Tilda Swinton, a very prominent actress, but a very, very white actress, play it what's supposed to be a very Asian ancient character. And it's like, that was whitewashing, any way you look at it. But this, I don't think it was.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's fair. I really don't feel like it's my place to be the jury on this one, but...
I mean, you did like a Sonic movie. I mean, gosh, dude. I mean, you're so branded, good. Dude. You branded. Anyway, all right, moving on to a later piece of information. Although, to be clear, we do not have the full context of this piece either. Sakurai, as I mentioned, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, Sakurai said he was going to do another column on Famitsu about the upcoming Super Smash Bros. Ultimate Fighter Pass 2. And we have gotten excerpts out of that. And according to the translation that we have had, or that I am seeing, it said that there will not be any more characters after this upcoming Fighter Pass. Now, Tyler claims he's seen a translation that says that there isn't any announced. So that's why we're waiting for the full translation before we post it on the website so that there's no confusion or whatever.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
No, I've seen, because it's obviously in Japanese, I've seen some people say there are no further plans. Which means not right now, but there could be plans down the line. So yeah, it's not a guarantee that this is it.
Yeah. So, but that's what we're waiting for, the full translation, because you know some words can get lost, and Sakurai himself has been mistranslated multiple times over these things. So we're gonna wait for the full translation and then dish on that. But just to focus on this, should the Fighter Pass 2 be the last DLC pack for Ultimate?
I really hope that it would be the last one, because like, as much as I would love to have extra more characters, I really don't want to see Sakurai going to the mortality fate early on, because again, the last thing we need is to have another macabre passing of Nintendo's famed fathers. I mean,
yeah.
Heck, we already lost Satoru Iwata right now. The last thing we need to have is have Daddy Sakurai losing his luck to his arm tendonitis, as far as we know. So, like, if this is gonna be the last thing, and perhaps this is indeed the last thing, let this be Sakurai's legacy. Because honestly, if this was the last legacy, I would gladly accept it.
I see your point, Will, but I also think Sakurai, you know, he's a grown man. He knows what his body can do. He knows what his body can do. And if he wants to keep making DLC, I mean, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to play it. Should it be, to me, kind of will depend on who is included in Fighter Pass 2. Because if we're scraping the bottom of the barrel here, then yeah, I'm good. I mean, the roster is huge as is. But if there are some really cool characters that are still out there that, like, say we go through Fighter Pass 2 and we still don't have Rayman or Crash Bandicoot, yeah, then I'm going to think, yeah, you know what, it's worth it. Why don't we do Fighter Pass 3 and get some of those guys in there?
I have two minds on this, because I do feel there needs to be a finite finish to this, because, you know, and I'm seeing this a lot with, you know, we're seeing it with Street Fighter, we're seeing it with Blaze Blue, Cross Tag Battle, we're seeing this with Dragon Ball Z Fighters, where there's like, you know, one character at a time, you know, expanding the roster. And for those games, I mean, outside of maybe Street Fighter, which is way more competitive in terms of the esports market, you know, for Smash Brothers, it would make sense to keep going, because each new character adds something to the game, adds a new specialty that you could, potentially master and all that. So I could see that, but I feel there needs to be a finite limit, because eventually you are scraping the bottom of the barrel, and then potential characters that could be, if there is another Smash Brothers game, you know, are robbed, because, you know, this is the ultimate one, yes, but that doesn't mean it's the final one. Ultimate doesn't mean final, potentially. So, I do think that if you just keep going, yes, you're continuing the hype, and yes, you're continuing to make Smash Brothers an evergreen title, but eventually we want them to stop so that they can work on the next game and make that
right.
One even better. So, and like you said, the game's already huge. This is one of the biggest fighting games in the history of fighting games. Nothing is going to beat Marvel vs. Capcom 2, because they had 160 characters. But still, you know, they're getting closer to 100. And I would I love to have 100 characters in a Smash Bros. Game? Sure! But if they have to go through like 5 fighter packs to get through that, the novelty will wear off. You know,
right.
we're all hyped right now because we don't know what the first character is, but eventually the hype will wear off. So.
And how about, like, for the next Smash game, like, the joy of who are they going to add? Instead, it's going to be, who are they going to cut?
Yeah,
because, you know, like, that we have so much fun right now being like, oh man, I can't wait to see who is revealed once that flaming logo dissipates. But, you know, come next game, we're going to be like, all right, so here are the characters that we really want in. We could use Lanky Kong, hasn't been in yet.
Yeah,
and,
love Lanky.
You know, like, I mean, listen, Lanky Kong is amazing. That was a bad example. Lanky Kong should be in it.
Hey, but shut your mouth.
You see the point.
Hey, if you could have Dixie, I get to have Lanky, all right?
Yeah, no, Lanky would be great. I love Lanky Kong.
Never forget the DK rap. He's got no style, he's got no grace, but this Kong's got a funny face. Love that one. Love it. But, yeah, I understand what you're saying, because you're right. Like, Sakurai says Ultimate is the ultimate in terms of the roster size, so we're literally going to be in a who remains, you know? And you could bet that a lot of these third-party characters ain't coming back because of all the not the struggle, but the process of trying to get, like, they almost didn't get Snake back. So we almost lost that Everyone Is Here banner, so I don't think we'll get that again, so... But that's why I'm saying end it now, and then if you want to make this next Smash Brothers game, start working on that and then have some of the surprises for that. Which actually leads to my next point, which is Sakurai notes that because he is working so hard on these fighters, he can't do other gaming jobs, which he says he's fine with, but we know he likes to make other games. His team was part of the Kid Icarus Uprising squad, and a lot of us want Kid Icarus back on Switch. So... You know, if he could stop with Fighter Pass 2 to make the next Kid Icarus game, I'm for that.
No, I agree. That's a great point. Sakurai is one of the most talented developers out there. That gets lost, I think, in the fact that he's always making Smash games. But the passion that he brings to every project, it's almost unmatched. So whatever he does, you know at the very least that it's going to be a labor of love, and you're going to find something that you really like in that. And I would love to see him on a creative new project.
I agree.
Right. Of course, like, heck, even from his other IPs, like Kid Icarus, even Kirby games, like, I would like to see him, like, trying a new adventure definitely as well. I mean, once he's done with Smash, definitely, I would like to see him, like, take on a new idea to show off in the industry. So, yeah, definitely. I'm definitely open for it.
Alright, so with that, we're going to our final one, which is one that's very near and dear to the heart of Will and myself, because one of the head people at Atlus, who for the record does not have control over this process, but one of the head people of Atlus have heard that video game fans want Persona 5 pure, not Scramble, but pure, on the Nintendo Switch. And their response was, you gotta keep saying you want it, or there's no chance we're gonna make it. To which I say to you, lady, we've been asking for this for years! Right? And then when you, Atlus, revealed Persona 5 Scramble, we reacted violently. Okay, maybe not violently. I only hit Will once, but kidding. But, you know, we didn't react well because we're like, we don't want a Warriors game. We want Persona 5, all right? That's what we want. And no, you give us a Scramble game. So trust me, Atlus, we're asking for Persona 5 on Switch.
It's definitely something to think about. Yeah, like we have been clamoring for a Persona pure game, regardless, for a long time now. Ever since the original came out on PS4, and of course, naturally, what we're still waiting for is news of Shin Megami Tensei 5. We got pretty much nothing on the Atlus front that's really helped us. Like, we've been even everybody from fan petitions, fandom, like, we want bring Persona 5, or heck, even Persona 3, Persona 4, even the prior Persona games to Switch. That would be the dream game. And of course, everybody, including like the recent Japanese survey from Atlus, like, how, which sent it to the general public, like, how would you feel if you port like these certain games, like the Etrian series, Persona series, or any other licensed properties from Atlus? And there's like one, I remember one person like just checked off everything, like, nope, just bring everything to Switch. I'll take it. And it's just like saying, like, in this interview for Persona 5 Royal, and saying, like, they know that you want it for Switch. You just need to really exclaim, like, really state your demand. But yeah, as you said, Todd, like, we already have been stating our demand for bringing the Switch. It's just if whether or not you want to do it or not.
And then to prove this, there was a movement on Twitter at #FreePersona.
Right, Break Free Persona.
Yeah, Break Free Persona. So yeah, we want it on Switch, lady. We want it on Switch, Atlas.
Right, right. And that's kind of also a little thing as well. Like, we're going to, like, how Atlas has become so mainstream since, like, they bought out from to Sega. It's almost wondering, like, can't help but wondering what is the localization department doing? Like, is it we're not from the West or from Atlas Japan? Like, if they want to really go through with a full port of their licenses, is like, it really is. I can't help but wonder, honestly. It's like, yeah, we want it. We want it. How many of you, like, I would be very happy for, like, people can share my love for Persona to Nintendo Switch. And now so people can understand why this thing is such a pure title. Aside from waiting for news of Shin Megami Tensei 5, which, come on, it's about time we show off news now, yeah.
No, they're gonna pull a Marvel on you and, like, do a teaser of a teaser for a trailer that's gonna come out in 2 years.
Last thing they mean is another Final Fantasy VII remake trouble, but yeah,
oh,
I agree.
Or Kingdom Hearts 3.
And also, just a little segue, we're going to Atlas News as well, because I wrote the story, is that on the Korean ratings games board, apparently, Catherine Fullbody and XCOM 2 is apparently coming to Nintendo Switch sometime down the line. Apparently. Right now, just only confirmed on the Korean rating board. It's not a confirmation yet, but apparently, like, there is a sign that, I don't know, perhaps this is something planned on Atlas's side, because this was entered before the public survey was sent out. So perhaps we're all getting a Catherine Fullbody coming to Nintendo Switch, which is heck. If this is one of the first two ports to Nintendo Switch, then heck, I'm all for it. Catherine is a very good puzzle game, and definitely I want people to experience it. So that's something on the Atlas front.
All right, so moving on to our main event, which, yes, we're going to be talking about Sonic again. Because with the success of Detective Pikachu last year, and with the success of Sonic the Hedgehog this year, I saw an article that said, are video games the next big, you know, genre? We all know the answer to this. The answer is no, okay? Because while superheroes took a while to, you know, get their stride, there were still great superhero movies all the way back in the 80s, be it from Superman, then the 90s with Batman and Blade, 2000s with the X-Men and Spider-Man, and then obviously 2008 on between the Marvel and DC cinematic universes. But, you know, that doesn't mean that there can't be these focused, really good films, you know? Because don't forget, before these two, we had the Resident Evil franchise, which is based on a video game series and had like 7 movies. So clearly that was a hit. And then the Tomb Raider got enough to be a sequel. So we're going to look at the history of video games, and we're going to pick what we think can be the next big video game movie and or franchise. And we're going to do it in a Nintendo discussion. Alright, I'm going to go first because I'm scared of what Will's going to say, and I don't know what Tyler's going to say, so I'm going to stick with Nintendo. Now, for the record, ladies and gentlemen, I have decided to pull the Nintendo bias off from the topic, and if they feel like there's a video game outside of Nintendo, because Sonic is obviously not a Nintendo character purely, that they feel that could make a good movie, I'm going to let them say it, because we shouldn't restrict ourselves to Nintendo. So, but I will go Nintendo because I think there is one franchise that they can really do well, and that is Metroid. Metroid is, of course, you know, in many people's opinions, one of the best franchises in Nintendo. It is one that is the most story-driven, and most importantly of all, it is something that can easily connect with viewers, and that is alien killing action. All right, because we've already had Alien, we've already had Predator. We've had, like, all these other kinds of things, so why not have one with a space warrior bounty hunter named Samus Aran, you know, going out and completing bounties all over the universe? And the beauty of this is that, unlike a lot of video game movies, including a certain one with the blue Speedy Hedgehog, this one won't require a lot of talking from people. Because this one, I really feel they could do more of a silent movie kind of thing with only, like, light talking via flashbacks and communications, because Samus really doesn't talk. talks in certain games, including the much maligned Other M, but she does talk in Metroid Fusion. And if they do it right, they could make it more like a suspense alien thriller. Think like Alien Isolation, the game, but apply it to a movie where the drama is where is the action going to happen next, you know? And Samus scanning things to learn about the history, kind of like Metroid Prime. You know, there's a lot of ways you can make it work. And then with the action, you can go full tilt, you know, using all of Samus' abilities, her blaster, the morph ball, the screw attack, obviously. And you could play this up really fun. Now, which story should they do? That's a bit tricky. They could go Prime. I feel like that one could work. They could do the original games with Mother Brain and the Metroids. That could work. Or they could go an original story if they feel that they could make it work. There's a lot of potential here, and obviously there's potential for sequels if they do it right. But I think if you want to do like the most simple, less is more, go for the action but keep this drama and suspense, I feel Metroid would totally work.
I agree. That's a really good pick. When I hear a Metroid movie, the first thing that I picture is the Iron Man suit from within the helmet. You know, when you see Robert Downey Jr.'s face and he's scanning things.
Yeah.
That would absolutely, you could just almost just copy and cut and paste that. And it would be really cool to see Samus kind of reacting to things from within the visor. And you have a lot of choices for how you want to go with the feel for a Metroid movie, too. You could go, honestly, a little more horror if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah.
Because it creates that sense of isolation. The monsters that you fight are kind of terrifying. And I'm sure you wouldn't want to make it a straight horror movie, but
no.
You could very much use horror elements to kind of build suspense. I think that would be one of the best picks for a movie that could also actually be kind of artsy while still being a great video game movie.
Although I don't think Nintendo would do it, I feel like they could push this to PG-13. Just to add like kind of the horror and the action elements. I mean, if they do it right, a fight between Samus and Ridley. I mean, if you want to throw in Sigourney Weaver, I'm not going to stop you. I mean, Ripley, believe it or not.
Yeah, I was going to say, believe it or not.
There you go. That's an SNL reference, by the way. You know, that could totally work. Like, I could totally see that being awesome, man. I actually knew people from Hollywood that tried to do a Metroid fan film called Enemies Within, and they had a suit ready, they had the actress ready for Samus, but they got shut down by Nintendo. So imagine if Nintendo like gave it to a real studio with a good budget and just like totally went full Metroid with like not the horror, but the darkness, the suspense, the mystery elements of what happened on a planet or something, and then ending in like a totally insane battle with Ridley. You know, it would be so boss. So
I definitely like the idea, because yeah, I can only imagine like we're going to, if you thought like Ridley and the other aliens in the Metro Prime series was scary enough, I mean, I can only imagine how this would be portrayed in a silver screen. Like, I can only imagine Kraid like seeing that big lizard thing with that stomach. Like, yeah, that would be, I always was scared of Kraid back when I was a kid. And like, if they can portray something like these creativity of the big screen, I feel like it definitely work, especially with like Samus and like I said, like with the influence of like recent superhero movies like Marvel's films. I feel like it definitely work, especially with the current technology we have today.
Yeah, you know, one thing I would want them to do though is to bring in at least some of the sound design team from the Metroid Prime series, so that we could have like the most epic background music and sound effects. Because like especially if you go like with the no talking version of Samus, you need the music of the film to be awesome. And Metroid Prime series had some really awesome music to tie in like the transitioning of scenes and an action sequence. So this could be really good if they let it work the way it should. Video game movies haven't always been the best. They try at times to stick to the source material, and then they blow it in the end. We've seen it so many times. But if they really commit to what Metroid could be, and not make it like, you know, Other M, this could be something really special. All right, Will, I'm letting you go next. You remember my warning. You laugh all you want. I will find you if you say that game. I swear.
No worries. Oh, great year, hoster. My choice, it has been done before, and personally for me, I still have hope they can really do this license well, and they have done it before. I'm gonna go with the Mario series. Yes, they have done the film, but even Nintendo does not talk about that old film, which with Lou Albino, and of course that dinosaur Yoshi, which, okay, I mean, personally for me, I did not mind that movie. I really, like, kind of appreciate for what it is, but of course, naturally, the Goomba and Bowser with that whole, almost feels like a post-apocalyptic feeling, like, it was not Mario, that was clearly not Mario,
well,
clearly.
You do realize they're actually making a Mario movie, right?
Right. Like confirmed.
Yeah, it's the same game from the same people who did Minions.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It's actually been in development for like over a year. If you recall, we've actually talked about it on this podcast.
Oh really? Did we have like oh crap. Oh snap. Okay.
Host, ladies and gentlemen. I remember all the actual important details that we've talked about on podcast past.
Okay. Well, that's embarrassing. So confirm that they're doing a Mario license. Okay. Because I know this kind of also referencing back to like our old progress. Like I did mention regarding to the whole Zelda movie, which I don't know. Now thinking about, it, perhaps maybe it's a little bit too easy to think about.
I'll go. You think of one, and then
Thank you for the lifeline. Thank you for the lifeline.
So I actually have two choices, so I won't go crazy in depth on any of them. But one live action Punch Out. Now we've done sports movies before, but I think you could do a really good Little Mac movie. You know, I don't have an actor in mind to play Little Mac, but you certainly could do a Punch-Out, being that it takes place in New York City. You got a real place. You could probably tell a pretty cool Punch-Out story there. And then the other one is Kid Icarus, and I think that would be animated for sure. But I love it goes back to the point about character. The characters in Kid Icarus are so colorful, and they are so vibrant that I think that you could... you could really tell an enjoyable story. Pit is one of the most vibrant Nintendo characters. And having that world loosely already based on mythology, with Hades kind of being the bad guy, you have some familiarity there with the audience. So I think a Kid Icarus movie as an animated feature would be really cool. And then Punch-Out, you could actually do a live action for.
I could see... Punch-Out working to an extent. I don't know if it could work in live action. I mean, boy, that would be hard to translate though, because like one of the reasons Rocky works is because of the storyline of Rocky, and or even the Creed spinoff franchise. You know, it was more about the characters than the boxing. Whereas yeah, Punch-Out, it would have to be, you know, Little Mac going up through the ranks. And I'm not saying you can't do it, but I don't know. I mean, you know about the EPO franchise, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, if they wanted to go animated, I could totally see them doing like that. I don't know if that would translate well to a live action, though. But that's just my opinion. I've been wrong before. It's rare, obviously.
Little Mac, it's a class. it's an underdog story.
It is true.
I feel like the script kind of writes itself, but you could kind of get almost do what they did with Jim Carrey in the Sonic movie and get these actors to come in and play really cartoony, bulky guys.
I gotta put it to you, because this is the question that everyone's gonna ask. All right, if they do a live action Punch-Out movie, let's just say they do in the next 2 or 3 years, is Mike Tyson the final boss?
Mike Tyson is absolutely the final boss, and The Rock is the bald bull. The Rock is in as the bald bull.
Oh my god!
Really? Dwayne Rock Johnson as the bald bull.
Yeah, he could. Or I mean, I guess you can make him super macho, man. That might work too. But I don't know. I give him a funny mustache. I don't know. I think it works.
Wow. All right, and as for Kid Icarus, I'm always up for that. I mean, we all are still dying for that Super Smash Bros. Anime thanks to the Kid Icarus Palutena trailer.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
just saying. All right, Will. Go ahead.
Okay. I finally got one. And yeah, I think it probably goes that it's set on Kagura.
I kid! Get my sword!
Probably I should go with Oni-chan Bara. I kid! Okay. Joking aside. Because I'm actually always thinking about regarding to recent things, and especially to a certain Archer producer. And I was thinking, can we actually do a Metal Gear Solid movie? Because, I don't know, like, granted, war movies themselves aren't really that new, granted,
Will, you're gonna hate me for this. I believe a Metal Gear Solid movie is already in development.
Alright, hold on. I'm gonna be the lifeline this time. I don't think that actually got done, because, okay, I'm looking at it now. There was one in the works, but it hasn't been... Like, oh yeah, this thing was like going all the way back to 2011. Oh my gosh. So no, there is a...
March 19.
Okay, hold on. I got no one. Okay, stop. Stop. Okay, hold on. Okay, there is and there isn't. There is potentially a Metal Gear movie coming out, but as of December 9th, it is literally only in the script phase. So I will allow it. Go ahead.
Okay.
Even if that is true, that if there is still a Metal Gear Solid movie being made, like, I feel like, yeah, just the whole, like, because, again, Hideo Kojima has always been known for his just amazing story, and just how twisted, of course, talk about the origin of Snake, Les Enfants Terribles, Solid and Liquid, just during the first game, that's easily a movie right there. And that's kind of one thing also I preach about Hideo Kojima. Like, a lot of people say, like, his games are easily movie material. And, of course, many people just want him just to simply make movies, which he has said he has some desire to do so. And, of course, like, yeah, recently with Death Stranding, which is easily could be described as a movie film, it's just, like, yeah, with Metal Gear Solid, like, I would definitely love to see David Hayter make a cameo appearance. Of course, with, like, the whole martial arts with Sniper Wolf, all of Foxhound, it just feels like it really does, like, would work as a good war, but also espionage kind of type of film. Of course, with the different toys with Otacon, of course, like, this reference, and of course, with Frank Yeager, or even with Metal Gear Ray and Rex, I would like to see how it be portrayed. So, I mean, it's not the first time we have, like, mech battles in the cinema, so why not have that? So, yeah, with Metal Gear films, I feel like we could actually finally make this a reality with the current technology, I feel like. I mean, if that doesn't fail, I have that backup plan and probably say, like, maybe F-Zero, because we did have, like, that Speed Race film a while back, and Tron, so maybe we can finally bring back the whole... futuristic racing genre to.
I am shocked you didn't go with F-Zero right from the jump, because that would be great. I mean, you could definitely do. Yeah, I mean, the car movies, the Fast and Furious, people devour those movies. I think there would definitely be an audience for a futuristic racer.
Mm-mm-mm. Right, and of course, was there an origin story in the comics or any media for Captain Falcon?
Technically, yeah, the anime gave more of an origin story, including inciting the fact that there is no one Captain Falcon. There's actually three.
If you watch
Death Battle in his battle against Johnny Cage, they elaborate on that. But yeah, he does have an origin story. It's just a little more complicated than it needs to be.
Okay.
Like how he gets his powers from his car, because that totally makes sense.
So yeah, maybe just expand on a forgotten Nintendo license like F-Zero, and yeah, like with the popularity of Fast and Furious, we could definitely have like finally a good like racing video game genre that we've been longing for. And who knows, maybe perhaps Nintendo will get some ideas for the next game. I don't know. So yeah.
Well, if they want new ideas, they could just hire me. I've actually got one for. I actually had an idea for two. One for the 3DS and one for the Switch / Wii U at the time. And how they could actually like interact with each other, but hey, they didn't hire me in time, so pity for them. Now, as for the Metal Gear movie, oh, that could work, but there is a big problem here, and his name is Kojima. Because Kojima don't do anything simple. All right, even the first Metal Gear Solid game was full of, like, weirdness and contrived and convoluted plot lines. And, you know, if they just focus on the bare bones of it, yeah, they could totally do it with, you know, Snake infiltrating and fighting, what were the bad guys' names?
Foxhound, yeah.
Yeah, Foxhound and everything. Wait, I thought Snake was part of Foxhound.
No. Like originally he was, but then he like left afterwards. He's like going after the agents. Like,
oh, okay, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah. Story.
Anyway, but if they go into a little more of a bare bones storyline, they could definitely make it, you know, a spy thriller movie. But I don't know. That would be risky. And obviously, they'd have to shorten like what's a 10-12 hour game storyline wise into 2 at max. So, yeah, I mean. That's the thing. With video game movies, the reason they keep trying, like, you know, Blood Rain, Prince of Persia, you know, Tomb Raider 3 times, and, you know, everything. The reason they keep trying is because they know that this is something that people could watch and should watch at times. But the reason they don't succeed is that they either don't stick to the source material, they don't, you know, commit to what these movies are, or they try and just rewrite everything to make it more of what they feel the movie should be about, and that's how we got Mario Brothers. Mm-hmm. So never forget, never.
And again, I really like that Mario Bros. Movie.
Don't make me ban you, Will. I will ban you so fast.
You really don't like that film for real?
Just stop. Stop while you're behind, Will. Stop. So, all right. So with that, we are ending this episode of the Nintendo Entertainment Podcast. Tyler,
We did not have a poll question for you last week.
Very well. You were suggesting one for this week, though, so go ahead.
But this week, we are going to let you, the audience, weigh in on this Nintendo Direct debate that we have been having.
Yep.
Because I believe that I was correct in guaranteeing you guys a Nintendo Direct. I feel like I delivered. But Todd feels differently. So we will ask you, do you consider game-centric Nintendo Directs Nintendo Directs? I guess it's a biased way of putting it. I will say you can Rex Nintendo Directs.
Okay, let me put it to you this way. Was the Animal Crossing Direct a pure and or traditional Nintendo Direct? Okay, that's the easiest way to say it.
Okay, that works.
So, yeah. Do you consider it that way? Yes or no? There is no third option. All right? It's either I'm right or Tyler's right, and we all know I'm right. So... That is our poll question. And Tyler, if you want to do a bonus poll question about did you go and see the Sonic the Hedgehog movie and want to make 4 options about how they might have liked it, I will totally allow that.
Okay.
So, and of course, let us know if you did see the Sonic the Hedgehog movie. Did you like it? What were your favorite parts? Do let us know. Did you watch the Animal Crossing Direct? What were your thoughts on that? Are you going to get the game? Did you get Pokemon Home? And which... system did you get it on? Do you hope that we get more DLC from Smash Bros. Ultimate after Fighter Pack 2? And do you want Persona 5 on Switch? Let us know, and if we get an answer or two, we'll name drop you on the podcast next week. So, for Tellius Tyler and Warrior Will, I am Triforce Todd, and ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time. We are not out of lives. We made it to the end of the level, so get the rings!